This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Bouyerak says cholera, measles, and malaria are of particular concern, and measures are being taken to try to prevent the spread of these illnesses.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. Details on the story coming up. Also, the World Health Organization warns of the global health hazards of air pollution. And South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar says he will be in the capital Juba tomorrow to attend peace celebrations. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN Children's Fund reports that more than 80,000 children are among the 330,000 Congolese migrants expelled by the Angolan government since the start of October. The migrants were sent to the Democratic Republic of Congo's volatile Kasai province, where ethnic tensions triggered a brutal conflict in 2016. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva on the situation facing the deportees.
UNICEF reports that the migrant children, many of whom had lived most of their lives in Angola, are dealing with dire conditions. The UN agency says thousands of children are walking long distances in bad weather with little to eat or drink and are exposed to violence. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouyerak tells VOA there is a rising fear of disease and says the agency is very worried about the health of the children and their families.
There was a very, very serious crisis of malnutrition in Kasai, and these children are coming in very bad situation, very bad conditions from Angola. Some of them are suffering from hypoglycemia, and there might be an increase of malnutrition, acute malnutrition, which makes a child more vulnerable to all kind of disease.
Bouyerak says cholera, measles, and malaria are of particular concern, and measures are being taken to try to prevent the spread of these illnesses. He says UNICEF is installing chlorination points, hand-washing stations, and emergency latrines. Bouyerak says work is also going on to try to reunite children separated from their families and to provide those who are traumatized by their experience with psychosocial counseling. The Congolese migrants, forcibly expelled by Angola, had been working in the country's informal mining sector. UNICEF reports children as young as 13 and 14 were part of the illegal workforce. Angola's government has reportedly cracked down on the activity with the aim of reducing diamond smuggling and making the mining industry more transparent. Angola has denied allegations of mass expulsions and brutality, maintaining the migrants returned home voluntarily. The UN Human Rights Chief, Michelle Bachelet, calls the mass movement an expulsion and has said the influx of migrants could trigger a renewal of inter-ethnic violence in Kasai province. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From uncontrolled migration in the north to the rise of Islamist terrorist groups to political instability in places such as Libya, Mali, and Somalia, African security issues continue to pose a threat to Europe and the globe. Command Sergeant Major Davor Petek from the Croatian Army is the top enlisted leader for NATO's Allied Command Operations. He recently sat down with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bab to talk about NATO's effort to help stabilize the continent.
You know, NATO cooperation with African Union started back in 2005. With the establishment of the liaison office in Addis Ababa, and it's been growing steadily ever since. One of the main reasons why we started expanding the cooperation is because we as NATO, through our strategic direction south, are recognized of potential problems or potential negative effects that are coming from the African continent, and it's affecting the European continent too.
You think of the migration crisis. What are you working on now to help stem that problem?
We just established about a year and a half ago what we call a NATO Strategic Direction South Hub. at Joint Force Command Naples. Now, that hub is our way of reaching out and making sure we connect and we coordinate all the activities with all the organization and theater that are willing to share info with NATO.
And how has that been working?
It's been working actually very well. I mean, one of the things that we've been lacking in the past was the info flow between different players in the region. Now, with the establishment of this hub, this kind of opened doors to us to connect not just with the military assets in the region, but also with the non-governmental organizations or civilian organizations that are out there in Africa doing work to share that and better coordinate. So we've been seeing a steady progress. You mentioned that in 2016, in Warsaw Summit, we expanded that even more. Soon enough, you will see the NATO framework for the South, which should even more expand our coordination with the African continent.
NATO has a huge role with the African Union, which oversees AMISOM. I know that a lot of these countries were wanting to pull out of Somalia. They didn't. They decided in March not to. How critical is it for them to remain in Somalia to help fight off al-Shabaab?
Well, first of all, it's critical from the aspect of keeping the stability in the country. Now, I have to clarify, NATO's involvement in Somalia is only by providing strategic airlift and sea lift for the forces deployed. We don't have any NATO forces in Somalia, but supporting that through the sea lift and airlift, we want to make sure that sustainability of the security situation is there. If NATO will be involved in future more directly in Somalia, I don't know, that's up to political leadership to decide, but projecting stability is one of the key roles of NATO. Now that, again, it goes back, how is the situation in Africa affecting the rest of the world? Because it's not an African problem, it's an international problem that's affecting nations across the globe.
So how involved is NATO with some of the planning of the African Union's role in Somalia? I know you said that operations-wise, they only deal with the lifts, but there's a lot involved with the planning, right?
Well, that's the key task of this liaison office in Addis Ababa. Their main role is to link up with African Union and provide support and SMEs in planning, operational planning. So that is the key element. Whether it be by physically deployed there and providing that on location, or bringing those African officers and NCOs and leaders to NATO to provide that through education, through training, to direct engagements with NATO leadership. But it's mainly focused to operational planning and supporting operational planning.
Because it is October, and a year ago this month, there was a massive attack in Somalia. Considering the context of a year ago, is it still valuable to NATO to continue to support the government forces in Somalia?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all about maintaining secure and safe environment. And again, addressing the problem at the source is the only way to do it. When we address the problem at the far end, then we actually have to deal with a lot of more consequences than just supporting the nation that needs support in a theater. So absolutely, it's valuable.
That was NATO Command Sergeant Major Davor Petek. He was speaking with our colleague, Carla Bob. In South Sudan, a spokesman for rebel leader Riek Machar says he will be in the capital Juba tomorrow to attend peace celebrations. The occasion marks the signing of a revitalized peace agreement that aims to end the country's five-year-old civil war. Fighting started when President Salva Kiir accused Machar, then his deputy, of plotting a coup. Wednesday's celebrations will be the first time Machar has returned to Juba since fighting between his bodyguards and government forces ended an earlier peace deal. A spokesman for his group, the SPLMIO, says Machar led a team of officials from the military, security, and political branches of his party. The government has guaranteed Machar's security, though the spokesman says the SPLMIO would like Juba to show its commitment to peace by releasing political prisoners and activists still in detention. Leaders from several neighboring countries, including the presidents of Uganda and Sudan, will attend the event. Under the revitalized peace deal signed last month, Machar will be President Kiir's deputy once again after an 8-month pre-transitional period expected to end in April. Analysts have expressed concern about the level of mistrust between the two rivals, which is seen as a major obstacle to peace if the two leaders are to work together once again. The United Nations envoy on the Western Sahara has invited Morocco, Algeria, Mauritania, and the Polisario Front to Geneva for a meeting that could pave the way to formal negotiations. The four parties have accepted the invitation to hold talks December 5th and 6th on ending the region's decades-old conflict. Envoy Horst Koller asked the sides to submit proposals for what he says will be a roundtable discussion. Mohamed Saeed El Wafi, a Moroccan-American political commentator and a former Moroccan diplomat, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi about whether the talks could produce a breakthrough.
The mentor of Polisario is, has been, and I guess it will be, Algeria. So any talks between Morocco and Polisario without the presence of an Algerian will be senseless and will have no importance whatsoever. It wouldn't produce any agreement. And this agreement should take in consideration the ceiling of the Moroccan offer, self-determination under the Moroccan sovereignty.
UN envoy to the Western Sahara caller asked the sides to submit proposals for talks and has described the Geneva meeting as a roundtable discussion. Would that lead to mutual concessions that could produce a compromise at the end of the road?
I see it a mission impossible. To both Morocco and Algeria, we are facing two parties, which is Morocco is to offer self-determination under the Moroccan sovereignty. Algeria, in this case, is willing to enter in negotiations with Morocco, and that will be a concession itself, which means the Algerian will accept today to negotiate. That will be good enough for the Moroccans to say, well, in this case, all what we have to offer is plan of autonomy. Since 2007 in Manhattan, New York, when the negotiations started, I said, there is no way you can put a ceiling from the beginning to your concessions and then end up negotiating. The self-determination and the autonomy should have been the result of a long-term negotiations. You don't give something before negotiating about it.
But the Polisario insists that the status of the territory should be decided in a referendum on independence, and Algeria is supporting that too. So would Morocco allow such a long-awaited referendum to take place?
Morocco was the first country to agree for a referendum under complicated circumstances and during years of talking about the list of voters, who has the right to vote, who cannot vote, who is a Sahrawi, who is not Sahrawi. Are those living in Hamadat of Tindouf today are eligible to vote? And who are they? Are they descendants of Sahrawis? Are they born in the Algerian territory? Or they are born in the camps? Is there any other foreigners living over there? So the technicalities of organizing a referendum under the supervision of the UN will implicate a lot of work. And this work has been done before. Actually, the UN is describing the Moroccan proposal as being fair and being practical. We can all dream about a referendum, but at the end of the road, who's going to vote? It's as if we're going to go today to any country with multi-racial or multi-sectarian entities and then propose a referendum. If I organize a referendum in Lebanon today, are you sure that all the Lebanese living in Lebanon will vote? Or only those abroad will vote? Or anybody carrying the Moroccan or the birth certificate in Sahara will vote? What about those who are siblings? But what about those who are grandsons of Sahrawis born in Sahara? What about those who died and have their children now? Have they the right to vote? Yes or no? So the UN will be facing another challenge of another 20 or 25 years to determine this procedure. I don't think it's a good idea. Morocco has accepted a certain time and felt like it wasn't practical.
That was Mohamed Saeed El Wafi, a Moroccan-American political commentator and former diplomat. He spoke with our colleague, Mohamed El Shenawi. 19 past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A new report says African nations need to reduce their birth rates and create sustainable jobs to tackle youth disenchantment. It will also encourage people to stay home and not become economic migrants. The latest Ibrahim Index of African Governance says Africa's young workforce could transform the continent for the better. But it also says hope and opportunities are needed to keep people from becoming disillusioned and drawn to militant groups. That unhappiness has fueled the rise of youth movements in countries where the young generation says their aging leaders must do more to provide jobs and education. The report says education in 27 of the continent's 54 countries is on the decline, further hurting the young population's future. The situation is likely to decline further as the population of Africa is forecast to double by 2050 and those aging leaders try to hold on to power. Some have successfully dropped or extended age and term limits, and the report says the taboo against birth control has to be broken. The World Health Organization says air pollution kills hundreds of thousands of children every year and puts the physical health and neurological development of hundreds of millions of other youngsters at serious risk. The WHO is issuing a report titled Air Pollution and Child Health, Prescribing Clean Air, on the eve of the UN agency's first ever global conference on air pollution and health. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports more than 90% or nearly 2 billion children under the age of 15 breathe toxic air every day. The WHO says debilitating problems associated with air pollution begin at conception and continue until adolescence. The report notes pregnant women exposed to polluted air are likely to give birth prematurely and have low-weight babies. A WHO scientist and expert on air pollution, Marie-Noëlle Brun-Dries, warns that many babies will have neurodevelopment problems resulting in lower IQs.
The fact that air pollution is stunting our brains even before we are born, the fact that it's leading to diseases that we may not be able to see immediately but look at much later in life, like adult diseases, our lung function and our respiratory systems are being altered during their development.
Dries says this can lead to chronic respiratory and cardiovascular diseases as well as certain types of cancers later in life. In 2016, the report estimated that 600,000 children died from acute lower respiratory infections caused by polluted air. It said the heaviest toll is paid by children in low and middle-income countries. The report found that the highest death rates among children between the ages of 5 and 14 from both ambient and household air pollution occur in the African region. The report says switching to clean cooking and heating fuels and technologies could save the lives of many children. It says other measures for reducing the toxic impact of air pollution include moving away from fossil fuels. The report recommends the use of cleaner, renewable energy sources, less dependence on private cars in favor of public transportation, and better waste management systems. WHO officials say the benefits from implementing such measures will be felt almost immediately. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Animal conservation groups are condemning China's decision to ease restrictions on using tiger bones and rhinoceros horns in traditional medicines. The Worldwide Fund for Nature called it an enormous setback for the endangered species. The Humane Society International says China has signed a death warrant that will encourage poaching of the animals. China today defended the decision to allow the sale of rhino and tiger products for scientific or medical research or for use in medicine. The foreign ministry said China's 1993 ban on trade in rhino horn and tiger bone did not take into consideration the needs of science or medicine. Many people in China believe rhino horn and tiger bone can treat a variety of ailments, although there is no scientific proof that they do. Conservation groups say poaching to feed demand for these products has devastated the populations of tigers and rhinos. South Africa's unemployment rate is on the rise despite the government's efforts to attract new international and domestic investment. This is bad news for the struggling economy. From Johannesburg, Yasir Ramprasad has the story.
The quarterly labor force survey released Tuesday shows there were 6.2 million unemployed people in South Africa in the third quarter of 2018. In a country with a population of about 57 million people, only 16.4 million are employed. The jobless rate increased to 27.5%, up 3/10 of a percentage point. According to the data, the number of jobs fell in 7 out of 10 industries. Private households, mining and manufacturing showed the largest declines. Economist Kaya Sitole says depressed business conditions in the country are contributing to the increasing numbers of unemployed.
What we face in South Africa is really a long-term problem of an economic system or economic architecture that is really resistant towards absorbing new entrants into the market. And of course, what we're seeing here is that our inability to make the ad market more adaptable to really the crisis of unemployment that we're facing is really problematic. Now, given the small economy that we have, it simply means that the barriers to access become higher, because if the people that are competing for the jobs are that many and there are so few job opportunities, it would mean by default that the people with better qualifications are the ones that are at the front of the line.
Sitole says there won't be a turnaround in the numbers anytime soon.
It'll be very difficult to sort of imagine that this could be turned around. And I think when people try to analyze what the real bottlenecks are, it's really, of course, that if your entire economy itself is not growing, then the capacity to absorb new entrants is non-existent. But also what you're seeing here is that, unfortunately, the South African workforce itself seems to be behind the curve in terms of upskilling itself.
Sitole and other economists say job prospects for now are on the downward trend, with the young people aged between 15 and 24 years the most likely to lose out on employment. South Africa has been in a recession for much of this year, driven by slumps in the communications and transportation sectors, as well as agriculture. In addition, the government is burdened with massive debts that hamper its ability to address unemployment. I'm Yashira Ramprasad in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
I'm Lino Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will have an exclusive interview with Dr. Helena Ndube, Namibian ophthalmologist notable for her charitable work among sufferers of eye-related illnesses in Namibia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.